Do you see page 2 where it says Al Zeh Kasav Hagon Rav Shneur Zalman? Okay? So we're looking for an answer to the following question. If you assume that the maximum number of students in a class for one Rebbe is 25, you remember that discussion, and therefore if one of the fathers wants to hire a Malame to teach Mishnah or Gemara in a smaller setting, more intimate, less students in the class, he has no right to demand that from the kahal, from the communal school, but rather he'll have to pay on his own. He can pay his own son for, you know, pay a tutor for his son. According to Rav Shneur Zalman, the reason why this is so, and this you'll see on the bottom of page 2, is because a malamed is not allowed to receive payment for Torah Shebaal Peh, and he can only be paid for Torah Shebichsav. Even with regard to Torah Shebichsav, the Sugya Nedarim, if you recall, has to find ways of circumventing the law. He's not really being paid for teaching Torah, he's being paid for Taimei HaMikra, or he's being paid for being a babysitter, you know what I mean, watching the children and so forth and so on. So on the top of page 3, we point out that Lechora, this Chiddush of Rav Shneur Zalman is against the Rambam. The Rambam is in Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin, and I'm going to look inside the original text of the Rambam, and you have it on the top of page 3. Right? On the top of page 3. Maybe this is an old version?
Yeah, no, it's the one you gave me. They're part of morning from the first week.
Okay. So the Rambam says the following: Hoya minag hamedina likach melamed hatinokos schar. So the accepted custom in that area, in that city, was that the melamed would get paid, and they relied on the heter of Masechta Nedarim, whatever it might be, that he's teaching Pisuke Taimim, or he's teaching, he's watching the children. No sin lo scharo, so he will get paid. V'chayv l'lamda v'schar, the father now has to pay for his son's education, ad she yikra Torah shebichsav kula, up until but not beyond Torah shebichsav. So if the child is ready to learn Torah shebaal peh, the father is not obligated to pay out of pocket and hire a malamed for that. It doesn't mean he's necessarily exempt from his own personal obligation to teach the child Torah Shebaal Peh, but he doesn't have a financial obligation, he doesn't have to pay to hire a teacher for that. Makom shenagu lalamed Torah Shebichsav b'schar mutu lalamdo b'schar. Again, there's a question here. The Rambam is atypically verbose, but that's something that belongs to Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin. What we're interested in is the next piece of the Rambam. The Rambam says, "Aval Torah Shebaal Peh also lelamdo v'schar." So you're not allowed to take a salary for teaching Torah Shebaal Peh. However, what happens if a father does not have a possibility of finding someone, some scholar, to teach his son Torah Shebaal Peh? There's no one out there who wants to do it for free, gratis. Everybody needs a salary to bring home some money for his family. So the Rambam says, Lo Matzah, this you'll see on the top of page 3, Lo Matzah Mishi Alamdo Bechina, he cannot find for his son someone to teach his son Torah Shebaal Peh for free, yilmod b'schar, that he has to pay for it. Shenemar emes kneh. The Rambam quotes a pasuk, I think it's in Mishlei, if I'm not mistaken. Emes kneh, by the truth. The truth here is referring to Torah. If this be the case, a father is obligated to shell out for the education of his son at the level of Torah Shebaal Peh under the halach of Emes Kneh, because he can't find anyone to teach his son gratis, then we have a problem. Because we said that according to Rav Shneur Zalman, the nature of the chiyuv that's incumbent upon the community to offer education, a school for all the children in town, is an extension of the father's obligation. And the father's obligation, in terms of finances, only extends to Torah Shebichsav. That's what Rav Shneur Zalman says. Therefore, the community who are guaranteeing the father's v'limadetem osam es b'neichem, the fulfillment of his obligation to educate his child in Torah Shebichsav, the community is going to sell out for that. And if the father is not able to pay his share in the tuition, then the community will cover the bill. But here we see in the Rambam that even as far as Torah Shebaal Peh is concerned, the father will have to pay for his son's education under the halach of Emes Kneh. Lo matzah mi she'ilamdo b'chinam yilamdo b'schar. So then, when we extend the father's obligation to the tzibur, to the community, then we should pick up the tab even for Torah Shebaal Peh. Is the question clear? Let me go over it one more time. The chiyuv of Hoshavas Malamdei Tinokos, which, as we said many times, is a communal obligation to pay, to hire a teacher for the children in town to teach Torah. What happens if the father wants the community to cover the bill for Torah Shebaal Peh, which might mean hiring another Malamed? Rav Shneur Zalman, in his magnum opus on Hilchus Talmud Torah, says that there's no such obligation. The community doesn't have to pick up the tab. They can send it back to the father, who's demanding, you know, let's hire another Malamed for Torah Shebaal Peh, and they can say, you pay for it, Mr. So-and-so. You can't force the tzibur. Says Rav Shneur Zalman, why? Because the chiyuv of the father only extends as far as Torah Shebichsav is concerned. He doesn't have to shell out money for teaching his son Torah Shebaal Peh, and therefore the community doesn't have to pick up that chiyuv. If the father decides on his own, you know, he volunteers to shell out of his pocket and pay tuition for sending his son to Neri Yisrael of Baltimore, so that's his decision. But he can't force the community to pay for that. Why? Because it's Torah Shebaal Peh. But I'm claiming that this doesn't square with the Rambam, because the Rambam says black on white that if the father couldn't find anyone to teach his son gratis without money, then he's got to pay for the education of his son. You see that the father is obligated to pay for the education of his son, even in Torah Shebaal Peh. Therefore, by definition, according to Rav Shneur Zalman, the community should likewise pick up that obligation to pay the salary of a teacher of Torah Shebaal Peh. And if a father comes along and says, you can't teach my son Torah Shebaal Peh in such a large class, why can't he demand of the tzibur that they pay the bill for the salary of that malam?
I'm not sure it follows automatically. I don't know.
Yeah, why not?
I'm not sure why the Rambam couldn't say there's a chiyuv on the father that does not extend to the community after Torah, like the Torah Shebaal Peh. Why does it follow just because Rav Shneur Zalman says that?
No, I'm not saying that we have to accept Rav Shneur Zalman. I'm just saying, you know, I feel a certain lack of comfort. You know, I don't feel comfortable with the fact that, you know, the Rav Shneur Zalman wrote this kudrus on Hilchus Talmud Torah. It's mamash a classic, and there's nothing before him except for the Rambam. You know, who was six centuries before him, but be that as it may, the Rambam is the magnum opus. How could Rav Shneur Zalman not know the Rambam? Again, if you have the Amos HaKavod that I have for Rav Shneur Zalman, you know, that you have to understand everyone has the Amos HaKavod. In other words, he was great in what he did. His work on Hilchos Talmud Torah is a classic. I mean, it's being republished. You can't just poo-poo it. And if he's saying that the Chiyuv only extends to Torah Shebichsa.
Right.
How does he know that? He's saying it can't be otherwise because the father's Chiyuv doesn't extend beyond Torah Shebichsa. Because there's no possibility of imposing any sort of financial obligation with regard to paying the salary for a teacher of Torah Shebal Peh. That doesn't seem to be true.
So that doesn't agree with the Rambam.
Yeah, I would like to do in the next paragraph is to try to square off Rav Shneur Zalman with the Rambam, and maybe in a sense, Ira, what I'm going to say is very matim. It's very fitting for what you're going to say. I don't know.
Shneur Zalman is that? That's not Rav Shneur Zalman Auerbach, was it?
No, that's Rav Shlomo Zalman. This is Rav Shneur Zalman Miladi.
Oh, okay.
You know, he was the Baal Hatanya. You know, he was the first Rebbe. He wrote the Shulchan Aruch Harav.
Between him and the Rambam, there was about 400 or 500 years.
I would think more like 700 years, but okay.
Yeah. Was it that much?
Hey, isn't the Rambam almost 1,000 years ago? You know, 900 at least.
900 years.
Yeah, he lived about 200 years ago.
Yeah. What other sources were there in between?
Nothing. I'm telling you, it's unbelievable.
Nothing.
It's unbelievable. You know, there's a sefer that's going to be published in Israel called the Oz LaMelech. You know, the Oz LaMelech will try to address that vacuum and fill it up, because again, there are a lot of svarim on Hilchos Talmud Torah, but they're all modern svarim. I'm not going to say there was nothing. The Kesef Mishnah wrote a super commentary on the Rambam.
You must have researched it. Like, yeah. What about all the Nosei Kalim?
Correct, the Nosei Kalim. But again, what Shneur Zalman did was he actually wrote Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Nosei Kalim will comment on the Rambam. What's the source of the Rambam? How do we square the Rambam off with this? Maybe there's another sheet that blah blah blah. What Rav Shneur Zalman did was he actually wrote Hilchos Talmud Torah. I think it's 9 chapters, if I remember. I have to look it up.
And Raivit doesn't argue then on that particular Rambam?
I don't think so. I don't know. I don't know that there's any Raivit. I mean, the Raivit is usually published on the page.
Yeah, right. It's usually right there.
So let's see what the Oz LaMelech has to say. So Venira Lomar.
Sorry for asking the obvious. So
yeah, no, that's okay. Venira Lomar, do you see the next paragraph? You have that?
Yeah.
Okay, good. As long as you have.
Yeah.
I have to know that you have it.
I have.
So the Rambam says two things in Halacha Zayin. I just read it to you, but let's see it again, which seem to contradict themselves. In other words, sometimes you answer a question with another question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm claiming that Rav Shneur Zalman doesn't square with the Rambam, but wait a minute, the Rambam doesn't square with himself. Why? Because the Rambam, his opening line, we'll call it the Reisha of Halacha Zayin, says, Chayv l'lamdo b'schar ad sheyikra Torah shebichsav kula. What do you derive from that? Ad sheyikra Torah shebichsav kula. What does ad mean?
Until.
Right. That's the ceiling. Beyond that, he's not chayev.
Right. That's what it appears. Yeah.
Mashma deinu chayev olam the Torah shebal peh b'schar. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the Sefer, he says, lo matza mishi lamdenu b'chino, yolamdo b'schar, shenemar emes knei. And he's talking about Torah shebal peh. The Rambam seems to imply, in the very same breath, that he's obligated to pay for the son's education for Torah Shebal Peh. But he just finished saying that he's only chayv ad sheyikra Torah Shebichsav.
Yeah, so the obvious is that it's only chayv b'schar ad Torah Shebichtav on the ad Torah Shebichtav, and it's not a contradiction. And then afterwards, it's typically not chayv b'schar unless there's no one else that can do it. Bechinam.
Okay, but wait a minute, Ira. If you're telling me that if I can't find anyone to do it gratis, bechinam, I have to pay for it, then you're basically saying I'm obligated to pay for it.
No, only in that circumstance.
But again, even if it's only in that circumstance, you know, think about it. You know, what you're saying to me is, look, if you get somebody for free, take them. You know, you can't, you know, because who's going to give up a job to teach his son Torah Shmal Peh and then come home with nothing for his wife and his children? You know what I'm saying? So then, pay for it. But basically what you're saying is he has to pay for it. You know, unless he lucks out and he finds someone who's willing to do bechina. Yeah. In other words, all I'm trying to say is that if I only had the reish of the Rambam, who defines the limits of schar to Torah, limits it to what? To Torah Shmitzav, then I would tell you if he can't find anyone to teach his son Torah Shmal Pevachinam, then he's alleviated of his responsibility. Right. And the Rambam says no.
Right.
Oh. But I want to say here that there are two levels of chiyuv. The Rambam's not contradicting himself. The first chiyuv comes under the pasuk v'limadetem osam espenecha. The word osam, teach those things, you know, them, so to speak, to your children, refers to Torah Shmichsav. And that's the limit of the father's responsibility on a financial level. If he has to hire a tutor, a teacher, it's up to osam. Where do I derive this from? Because the Rambam is dealing with that pasuk until he gets to the Sefer of Halacha Zayin. It's only in the Sefer of Halacha Zayin, when he introduces a financial obligation to pay for Torah Shmal Peh, the Rambam introduces a whole other pasuk, Emes Knei. That's what we call Midivrei Kabbalah. What does Midivrei Kabbalah mean? From Nach.
Right.
There are chiyuvim, there are obligations that come from the Torah itself, from the five books of Moses, and anything beyond that is called Midivrei Kabbalah. So what I would like to suggest is that there are two chiyuvim. The chiyuv d'oraisa, as far as the Torah is concerned, that the ceiling is Torah Shmitzav. Beyond that, you're potter. You do not have a mitzvah obligation of limadat amosim espenecha. However, there's another halach of emes knei. Emes knei means that if you have to buy the truth, meaning the Torah, buy it, pay for it. That's already a secondary chiyuv.
So you say it's like a drabanan?
It's like a drabanan, correct. It's midivrei kabbalah. It's somewhere, let's say, between dorais and drabanan.
And that's a pasuk from the Nevi'im somewhere?
From the Nevi'im. I think it's from Mishlei. Again, I have to just find that for you. It's right here on the page. I just have to...
So what's the nafkamim?
The Koros v'tziyunim.
What's the nafkamim?
Yeah, take a minute to read the paragraph. I want to make sure I'm quoting a pasuk in Mishlei here and not messing it up. Just one second. He always tells you where the psukim are. Oh. This is frustrating. Mishlei. Oh, Baruch Hashem. I was beginning to get nervous. See, I couldn't find it. Mishlei Chav Gimel Chav Gimel. Very easy to remember. 23-23. Okay? By the way, Mishlei is even a little bit less than a normal Midivrei Kabbalah, because sometimes Mishlei is full of, what should I say, Musar Shmuzim. Yeah. I don't know what word I want to use, a finer word. Yeah.
It's like a higher moral code.
You know, I don't know if you derive. But the Rambam says that Emes Knei is going to... So I suggest the following. The first chiyuv, which is a complete chiyuv, a total chiyuv, to hire someone to teach his son Torah Shmichsav, that is the primary chiyuv. That's the Ikar chiyuv, and it's derived from the pasuk Limadetem Osam. And Osam means Torah Shmichsav. It's impossible to say that this obligation includes Torah Shmal Peh, because the Malamed is not allowed to take money for Torah Shmal Peh. So, how could the Torah on the one hand say that he can't be paid, and on the other hand force the father to pay him? So on a Torah level, since the Rambam says that you cannot teach Bishchar, you cannot teach Torah Shmal Peh and demand payment for it, again, you're not teaching Pisuke Tamim, or you're not washing the child for security purposes, you know, or you're not a babysitter. Ma'ani b'chinam, the Rambam says, afatem b'chinam. So it would be impossible for the Torah to impose upon the father a chiyuv that cannot be fulfilled according to the Torah law itself. Therefore, I submit to you that when it says v'limanetem osam es b'neichem, which includes a financial obligation incumbent upon the father to pay for his son's education, it's only Torah Shmichsav. And that's interpreted in the light of But then there's another chiyuv. A chiyuv liknos Torah. Emeskneh, you know, buy the Torah. Why do you have to buy the Torah? And this we learn from Mishlei. Because if there's no other option, and you want to guarantee that the Torah is transmitted to your son, because the nature of Judaism, of the Jewish tradition, is to pass the Torah on from one generation to the other, and all your son knows, and all you can give your son, is Torah Shebichsav, and you're too busy to teach him Torah Shebalpeh, by golly, you better pay for that if you can't get it for free. But again, that's not the primary chiyuv that's inherent in the pasuk l'manatim osa. What's the nafkamina? Who cares whether you call it a primary chiyuv or a secondary chiyuv? I wanted to suggest that this will reflect on the definition and the scope of the mitzvah, the chiyuv of hoshavas melamdim lebnei ha'ir, the public communal obligation to set up a school system and hire teachers. And we understand that since there are fathers out there who can't afford to pay for the education of the son, the community will pick up the tab. That's part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah that's incumbent upon the tzibur. But the definition of that chiyuv is to hire melamdim. What does melamdim mean? Melamdim means melamdei Torah shebichsav. The members of the city are not obligated to be mekayim anything other than the ikar chiyuv that's incumbent upon the father. There's another chiyuv on the father, but that's only a very personal chiyuv. That's the father as a yachid. The tzibur as a representative, as an extension of the father, meaning to the extent to which we can integrate the father's chiyuv into the tzibur, the communal chiyuv, and project the father's chiyuv onto the tzibur. That's only with regard to the ikar chiyuv of Talmud Torah limaditim osam espenecha. It would be nonsensical to impose a financial chiyuv on the tzibur to be moshiv malam the fetarsh bal peh and pay them, because they're not allowed to be paid anyway. The father on a private level, facing the, call it a crisis, as far as Mesiras HaTorah Lebanov, what's incumbent upon him, he divrei sofrim, is emes kneh. But that was a chiyuv that by its very nature was limited to the father. It wasn't extended to the tzibur. The tzibur has to help the father and support the father, if need be, in fulfilling his ikar chiyuv. They don't have to go into the kishkas of his particular situation where he couldn't find anything, he's desperate, and the Torah says, and the Tanakh says, emes kneh. Just to wrap it up, and then the floor is yours, Ira. Move on, Shapir. The Ein Bnei Ha'ir Chayovim Liskar Chacham Lelamei Torah Shebalpeh Delecha Chovas Ha'ir Ela Liskar Melamdim Lelamei Torah Shebichsav Lekayim Ikar Chovas Ha'av Midorais Haksuv Bikra Divli Maritim Oso. What do you want to say?
No, I was going to say, so the nafkamina.
I'm willing to accept another answer to the question.
No, it makes sense.
I mean, this isn't published, so it's an unpublished manuscript, so we can rewrite the script.
So the nafkamina is that, is Torah Shebichtav is ultimately communal and Torah
No, what I'm saying, in both cases of Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebalpeh are really not communal. They are private. Right. They are the father's chiyuv. But the difference between the two, meaning Torah Shebichsav on the one and Torah Shebalpeh on the other hand, is that with regard to the private chiyuv of the father as a father in Torah Shebichsav, we can somehow project that onto the tzibur. We can say, look, not every father is going to educate the son. There's a chiyuv on the tzibur to make sure that every child talks. But we don't have to be more than the father. We can universalize or communalize the father's chiyuv. Then there's another chiyuv that very much touches, shall we say, the relationship between the father and his son in a very private way.
Right.
And that is that in a particular circumstance where there's a crossroads and the two possibilities are either A, that my son be a total Amoritz. I mean, he'll know five books of Moses, that's it. You know, maybe he'll know Tanakh, but that's it. Or alternatively, I, as his father, will be Mekayim the Pasuk Emes Kneh. I'll literally have to buy Torah for him, go out and buy Torah for him. But that's a unique chiyuv that's confined, you know, that's that you can set up four walls and say that's between a father and a son. That's not something that the tzibur has to pick up on. You can say that tzibur has to defend and guarantee the fulfillment of limadetem osam es bneichem and el hayem olamdim, but we never impose the chiyuv on the tzibur for Torah Shebaal Peh. I'm not sure that this is correct. I'm just saying that's how I would reconcile Rav Shneur Zalman with the Rambam, which is, I think, is worth something. You know, again, because I don't want to put them in the same breath. Right. Because I, as much as I love Rav Shneur Zalman, he's not in the same league as the Rambam. You know, you're talking about a giant of giants, and then another giant. You know, but not in the same league. But on the other hand, they're both classics. You know, so. It's not shayak that Rav Shneur Zalman would argue with the Rambam. It's hard for me to say that. You know, it's very hard for me to swallow such a thing.
But isn't it, can I just say something funny?
Yes.
As an aside, so wasn't it kind of funny that the Daraisa obligation, v'lemada temotam, is to learn the Daraisa, and the Drabanan obligation is to learn the Drabanan?
Yeah, that's cool. I like that. Okay, let's go on. Okay, so this was all to try to conclude what we began last time. Now I want to go on to a different aspect of this halacha. What do we do? What methods of coercion do we have in our back pocket? What weapons do we have to force a city to fulfill its obligation in a case where they are derelict? The Rambam says, "Im lo hoshivu, if the city refuses to set up a school system." So again, here there's a question of what the girsa, the correct text of the Rambam is. According to some texts, it says machriven es ha'ir. Let me just see how the Frankel Rambam has it. Oh.
Base or MM.
What do you say?
It's a base or MM. Machriven or Machriven.
Yeah. Kol ear. Just one second. What's the language of the Rambam? Kol ear she'ein bo tinoko shel base rabban. Means they didn't hire a Molamed, machrimin es ha'ir, es anshe ha'ir. So this is a lashon of cherim. I mean, you put a whammy on them. It means we don't go near the city. We don't deal with them. We don't trade with them. We're not going to enter into any sort of intercourse with them in any relationship whatsoever. We're not going to supply them with anything, with water or anything. Mm-hmm. That's cherim. It's a very strict, very harsh, you know, method of coercion. Once they set up the school system, we'll lift the chair. V'im lo hoshivu, if they insist on being disobedient, machriven es ha'ir. That's the girsa that we have in the Frankel edition, which again, he goes through the manuscripts. Again, there are other printed Rambams that has machriven es ha'ir, but the truth of the matter is that machriven in sense makes more sense, because otherwise the Rambam is sort of repeating himself. And then finally, the Rambam says, why is this inyan, this topic, this obligation so severe that it generates such harsh punishments? She'ein ha'olam miskayim ela behevel piyam shel tinokos beis rav. That what's at stake here is the kiyum ha'olam. Fine.
What's machriven mean?
Like, machriven means we destroy the city.
So this,
literally destroy the city. So the Kesef Mishnah says that the source for the Rambam is a Gemara in Shabbos. But when you look in the Gemara in Shabbos, lo and behold, you find two opinions. Amar Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish is the first opinion. And he says in the name of Yehuda Nesia, Kach Mekublani Me'avosai. Kol ir she'ein bo tinoko shel beis ravon machriven osa. Ravina Omar machriven osa. So at first glance, we would have said there's machlokis here. What should be the method of of compelling, of coercing the city to fulfill its obligation? Should it be machriven or should it be machriven? But the Rambam, says the Kesef Mishnah, wanted to integrate both opinions, sort of like harmonize them. And therefore, says the Kesef Mishnah, Bereisha, meaning at the beginning, what do we do? What's our first method? Machrimin. Ansha, we put the members of the city into Chirim. Vahadar, and afterwards, if that doesn't work, if they're not responding, then Machrimin Osa, again, he has the gears of Machrimin Osa. Klomar, what does that mean? Machrimin Osa? Machrimin Osa. That we destroy the city. So in the light of the Kesef Mishnah, we could just summarize by saying that the Rambam came up with a chiddush here, in which he integrated two opinions and harmonized them. They were not at each other's throats, they weren't at loggerheads one with the other, but rather one opinion was talking about the first stage, and the other opinion was saying, look, what happens if that doesn't work? We'll offer a more harsh, you know, or the ultimate punishment, I guess it's.
Can I just ask what that means exactly?
What I would ask you, Iris, to hold that question. I'll tell you why. Because, you know, after we get into it, I think we'll see that it literally means we destroy the city.
Okay.
But we're going to have to figure out why.
Right.
And let's go on. Now, Rashi, back in Shabbos, the Sugya Daf Kuf Yud Tes, seems to imply, if I read it correctly, that Reish Lakish and Ravina actually argue one with the other. Not the way the Rambam would see it in the Kesef Mishnah's interpretation to harmonize. Rashi says, Machrivin, and that's the first opinion, namely the opinion quoted by Reish Lakish, Ika Shir, which means it's not a total destruction. It's only partial. The second opinion, as quoted in that Gemara, namely Ravina, says Machrivin. Rashi says Machrimin means lekashir, it's totality. So it comes out that if I understand Rashi correctly, Reish Lakish was a little bit light. Ravina was very heavy, meaning he wanted to be even more severe. The Lecha Mishnah here on the Rambam says Upirush Machrimin, the word Machrimin, the way the Rambam understands it, Loshen Cherem V'Nidui Shemachrimin Li'Anshei Ha'ir. However, he admits, the Lecha Mishnah, that Rashi didn't interpret the word Machrimin in that way. Because Rashi says, Machrimin Lekashir. Lo Pirish Kein Elami Loshen Chareva Ushmema. That sometimes, apparently, the word Machrivin could also, I'm sorry, the word Machrivin could also mean Machrivin. They're interchangeable. It means a total destruction. So the different, both Ravina and Reish Lakish are propagating total destruction. The only difference is that, are in favor of destruction. They're not talking about Cherim the way we know Cherim or Nidui. But the only difference is whether it's a complete destruction or only a partial destruction. Hainu, Daliba Derashi Ravina Pligi Areish Lakish. Ravina, the second opinion, wants a situation of Lekashir, without any holding back. Umachayv, and he requires Chareva below Shir. Delo Sagi, it's not sufficient to go Areish Lakish's way, according to Ravina, since there's a Shir. But rather what we need is an Onesh Chomer Yoser, a worse, a more severe punishment to make the ear chareva ushmema, completely desolate. So I'd like to understand, what is the machlokas here between Reish Lakish and Ravina? Again, according to Rashi, the Rambam says it's two stages, and both are correct. First we'll apply this punishment, if that doesn't work, then we go to the more severe punishment. Whereas according to Rashi, the way the Lecha Mishnah understood Rashi, there are two opinions, whether we should really go severe with them, or they don't deserve such a severe punishment. Now there's another commentary on the Rambam called the Maaser Rokeach. He lived many, many centuries ago, and he writes, Ravina, Rabbeinu, meaning the Rambam, Posak Ravina, Usvirle deravino la asufe al Reish Lakish asa. That Ravina was coming to add upon Reish Lakish. Behind the time of the Reish Lakish, Ka'omar, Li Olam, Ein Olam Iskayim, Ela Mipiyam Shol Tashbar, Vi Ein Mevatlin Atinokos, Afil Lubinian Beis HaMikdosh, Al Kain, Al Karchach Onsham Godol. Sharekim olam tolibus of Ravina Mestomolo Pligiahach El Svile the Kodamachurban Yeshla Hachemes Yoshfe Ha'ir. So in effect, what we have over here is we have two methods of punishment. One is called Machrimin and one is called Machriven. And they seem to be one less severe than the other. The only thing I don't understand is the language here of the Maaser Rokech. He says, Rabbeinu Pasa Kiravina, Usvirle Diravina Lo Sufe Al Reish Lakish Asa. It's a little bit confusing to me. The language of the Maaser Rokech is not clear. But what I do get out of the Maaser Rokech, which is very similar to what we saw in the Kesef Mishnah, is that there are two punishments. Both are appropriate, but bazach are zeh, in two different stages. If one doesn't work, because it's a little less severe, then you have to zap them with the more all-inclusive punishment, which means basically raising the city to the ground. Mm-hmm. Now, when the Maaser Rokeach, in the middle of this discussion, explains the concept of machriven below shiur, which is the more severe level of punishment, he adds a phrase, kimo, as we saw in a pasuk, va'yisem, va'hoysa, ha'ir, cherem. Now this pasuk, if you do a word search, you'll find it in Sefer Yoshua, with regard to Yericho. And apparently in the battle of Yericho, Yoshua destroyed the entire city. The Radak says in his Pirush on Yoshua, V'hoysa ha'ir cherem, he v'chol asher ba. So again, this pasuk, which the Maaser Rokeach is applying in the context of a city that didn't establish Tashbar, and we have to be machriv the city, he uses the pasuk v'hoysa ha'ir cherem. So that pasuk, at least according to Radak, means he v'chol asher ba. What's he v'chol asher ba? He shaloti bone od. Once the city is razed, is destroyed, you're never permitted to rebuild it. V'chol asher ba shalo yehena adam mikol asher ba. That no one is allowed to have any benefits from anything in that city. That's referring to Yericho at the time that Yoshua conquered Yericho. Now I don't know if this has any repercussions, bisman hazeh. In other words, I don't know if the Yericho of today is the Yericho of then, but if it was, then maybe we should not necessarily rebuild the city of Yericho. But let's assume our Yericho today is not exactly where the old Yericho is. Now the Yalkut, which is a collection of Midrashim on Yoshua, quotes Rabbi Brechia. And Rabbi Brechia said that what was Yoshua doing when he said "V'haysa ir cherem hi v'chol asher ba"? He was making the city of Yericho into an ir hanidachas. Let's quickly review what an ir hanidachas is. A city, most of the members of that city worshipped Avodah Zarah. And the Yalkut adds the words "V'harei ir hanidachas hasur bahana." So in other words, when we say that there's a cherem on the city of Yericho, which the Radak says that means you're not allowed to enjoy any benefits from anything in the city, that very much reflects what the Yalkut says on the same pasuk, that you can't have any benefit from the city because the city of Yericho was treated by Yoshua as an ir hanidachas would be treated. And the Rambam in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim speaks about the possessions of an Ir Nidachas, and he says that if most of the city is an Ir Nidachas, and you, this on page 4, on the top page 4, then you have to destroy the city. If anyone gets any benefit from anything in the city, he gets Malkus for that. Lo yidak biyodcha ma'uma min achir. So let's come full swing back to the two punishments which the Rambam has mentioned here in terms of a city that doesn't establish Tashbar, the first of which is Machrimim, and the second of which is Machrivim. So there's a commentary on the Rambam called the Mishnah Kesef. I happen to be very fond of his work. Sometimes it's a little bit tedious to read, but if you work on it and you get it, you usually get something out of it. He says, "Shemafrishim umavdilim es anshei ha'ir mechlal edusenu." He says that what is this cherem that we're going to zap the city with, meaning the members of the city? We're going to separate them from the Eda of Klal Yisrael. Right, so we have something called Adas Yisrael. These people are to be treated as foreigners. They're outside the pale of Adas Yisrael, which means also lases velases imahem. You can't have any dealings with them. Kidina mukram, just like anyone who's in Cherem. The acherkach kishalo shavu, if they don't do tshuva and they weren't makabel on themselves to organize a school system for Torah study. Mosifin, we go to the next level. Ladun osam bidin chomor. We're going to judge them and condemn them under a more severe punishment. And he writes, lahachrim esair kidin ira nidachas. So I finally found someone who goes on record as classifying this halacha of a city that doesn't establish a school as a halach of Ir HaNidachas. Until now I was sort of draying around and around. You know, I saw the Maaser Rokeach, who uses the Pasuk Kamo for Haisa Yir Cherem, and we said that Haisa Yir Cherem is like an Ir, Yoshua gave Yericho the status similar to an Ir HaNidachas. But we didn't see anyone.
No, the Yalkut says, no?
The Yalkut is talking about Yericho. He's not talking about a city that doesn't establish a school system. I was using the Yalkut to indicate that Yericho, by the edict of Yoshua, had the same halachic status of an Ir HaNidachas, because he says it's Asur Manoah.
Oh, okay.
But no one, until we see this Mishnah Kesef, used the concept of Ir HaNidachas to explain our halacha of an Ir She'ein Bo Tinoku Shabbos Rama.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a summary of what we learned from the Mishnah Kesef. Number one, on the first round, we're going to start with the onus, the punishment of a cherem. And we're going to impose a cherem on the members of the city. If they still persist and they do not establish a Malamed Tinokos, then we're going to go up to the next level, which means we're going to treat the city like we treat a city which is an Ir HaNidachas. Namely, it's as if they were worshipping Avodah Zarah. So l'chatchila, we use the power of a cherem. At the end, if that doesn't work, then we apply the din of an Ir HaNidachas. But if this be the case, then the question is obvious. What does Ir HaNidachas have to do with a city that didn't appoint Malamdei Tinokos? And not only that, if for some reason you want to equate this Avera, this terrible thing that they don't set up a school system with Avodah Zarah of Ir HaNidachas, so then why do we start with Cherem? I mean, when you have a city that's condemned as an Ir Nidachas, you don't start with Cherem. I mean, you go right down to the the gargle. You know, to the jugular.
And what happened to Ir Nidachas? They destroyed the entire city.
Mm-hmm. And everything in it.
Like everything in it, right?
Everything. So what I'd like to do, again, we don't have much time, but for the next 10 minutes, if you have that time, we can go through the Rambam and Hilchos Avodas Kochavim and try to get a grasp, a little bit of a deeper insight into how the Halach of Ir Nidachas works. The Rambam says in Hilchos Avodas Kochavim, with regard to Ir Nidachas, he says, just 1 second, what perek is this in the Rambam? Yeah, what perek is it? Just 1 second. It's perek dal. Okay, so perek dal halach avav. Heich din ir anidach. How do we establish a city? How do we condemn a city as an ir anidach? So we're not going to read this whole long Rambam, but let's focus on a few points. He says bezna gadol. You need a court. A high court of 71 elders. And they send let's call it a team, to investigate what exactly is going on. And they interrogate various witnesses. And when they come to the absolute conclusion that the entire city is worshipping idols, or most of the city, then they send out two emissaries, Talmidei Chachamim, to warn the members of the city and try to get them to do tshuva. They don't immediately condemn the city for destruction. Im chazur v'yasu tshuva, if the city repents, mutav, that's fine. And then we're back to square one. V'im yamdu be'avlasam, but if they continue in their terrible ways, bezdin mitzuvin Mitzavim, excuse me, L'chol Yisrael, Lalos Aleim Litzava. Beis Din sends out an ordinance obligating the entire people of Israel, the whole nation, to do battle against this city. It reminds me of the case of the Chet HaEgel, when the Bnei Aaron, Mil Hashem Eli, they mamish killed their own relatives. It's a terrible thing. They Tsarim Aleim, they siege the city, and then Archim Yimayim Elchava. Until they subdue the city and destroy it. But what do I see from this Rambam? We didn't go straight to the end to destroy the city, but first we warn the people of the city. Mm-hmm. Try to get them to do tshuva. This Rambam, I thought, could shed a little bit of a light on the Rambam here in Hilchos Talmud Torah. That if the city refuses to set up a school system and hire a melamed, then we don't go straight and condemn the city for destruction. But first what we do is machrimim anshei ha'ir. We put them into cherem. That's the appropriate vehicle on the first level to try to get the city to do tshuva, meaning to fulfill their obligation, their duty to set up a school system. Mm-hmm. According to this interpretation, Hachrama, putting the city into cherem, is not an onesh. The onesh is going to come later if they refuse. This is only a method, what we call a hasra, you know, some sort of warning, a method of scaring the people and trying to shake them up to do the right thing and change their ways. Because before you convert a city into an Ir Nidachas, and in this case, a city that hasn't appointed a teacher to teach the children, before you go ahead and give it the status of an Ir Nidachas, then what you do is you put the members of the city into cherem. If that doesn't work, then it becomes like an Ir Nidachas. So far we've seen in a number of different ways a parallel between our halacha of Ir Shalo, Shanshe Ir, they didn't set up a school system, and the Ir Anidachas case. However, when we get down to fundamentals, there seems to be a very basic distinction between Ir Anidachas and Ir She'en Ba Tashbar. Because in the case of Irani Dachas, what we do is we bring each member individually, each member of the city, to trial. He's judged for the Aveira of Avodah Zarah. And the Rambam says the following, Kol Mishabo Olav, if we can summon two witnesses that can testify that we saw this individual, we'll call him Reuven, we saw him worship an idol after he was warned, because if there was no warning, then maybe he did it Bishkaga. Mafrishin also. We put him on the side. He's under house arrest. And then we go one by one through the members of the city. Nimtzu kol ha'ovdim mi'uta. If we find that after we collected all those who worshipped idols, we rounded them all up with the testimony, each one had a testimony of two edim, and they turn out to be the mute, they represent the minority of the population of the city, then we take those that were condemned as idol worshippers, Soklin Osan, and we put them to death. The punishment for idol worship is Skila. What do we do with the rest of the city? Nitzol, they go free. However, Nimtzu Ruba, if we find that most of the city has been separated, as we said, under house arrest, they represent the majority of the city, then Mailam Osam Lebezna Gadol, we take them up to the highest court of the land. Bezna Gadol will review the case if they need more evidence or whatever it is. V'gomrim sham dinam v'hargim kol elu she'avdu b'sayif. There are a lot of details here in the Rambam that have to be studied. But one thing is very clear, that the judgment in this case of Irani Dachas, at least in stage one, is on the individuals.
Right.
For each individual, we're going to have a separate trial. We're going to have to bring witnesses, and the witnesses are going to have to testify to the fact that we gave him Asra, we warned him, and yet he went ahead and he worshipped the idol, he violated Asra. And only then can we establish a din miso, achiv miso on each individual. Then you have the collection of the individuals and you see if that represents the majority of the city. So basically the process of irani dacha starts with the individual. Every individual is guilty, is responsible for his own idol worship, his own criminal act. And then when it calculates to the majority of the city, then is a din of irani dacha. But we start with the chiyuv on the yochid. Now let's go back to our halacha. A city that is derelict in setting up a molame tinokos. Here, who are you going to judge? Reuven, Shimon, Levi? You're going to bring testimony against one individual, another individual? The whole city is guilty. Why? Because the nature of the obligation for which they've been derelict is a communal obligation. Mm-hmm. So if we're going to use the Rambam to assume that Cherem is the first stage, because that fills the Hasra, remember that the Rambam said as far as Ir Hanidachas is concerned, in the first they send two Talmidei Chacham Lazhiram, that's a Hasra, Ulachziram, that cannot be a basis for any understanding of the Rambam's Machrimes Anshei Ir, because the premise is that the chiyuv here of setting up Tashpar is not incumbent upon Reuven, Shimon, Levi, on any individual Yankel Beryl. It's incumbent upon the city. So don't tell me that we're going through a Hasra situation. Hasra is appropriate for the individual, one by one, to generate a guilt on that person. What does that have to do with our case of Tashpar? Of Tinoko Shal Beis Rabba? So now if we go back to the Lechem Mishnah that we started with, who says that according to Rashi, there is a machlokus between Ravina and Reish Lakish. One is Machayev Machriv and below Shir, and the other says, one says even with Shir, and the other says, that's Reish Lakish. And Ravina says, no, we need a total destruction. Perhaps we can now go back and interpret that machlokas in this light. To be high time a cholik ravina arash lakish. Do you have that? It's in the paragraph that starts al pi kushizu. The sphere le ravina de lo shayach din cherem al ansha ir kla. Ravina says the concept of cherem is inapplicable here. Kevin de lekachiv al ansha ir betoris yechidim. Cherem is something that you impose on one individual, another individual, one by one, as individuals. But here, we can only apply some sort of communal punishment, not an individual one. Veleka eladin cherem ha'ir bilvat. So the halach of cherem can only apply to the city. And that would be a destruction, but it wouldn't apply to the individuals. V'hainu dekomer avina, and I think it's very meduyak in the language of avina, there avina says, machrimin osa. The focus here is osa, in feminine, is the city. That's called, according to Rashi, lekashir, because the onish is on the city itself. If the onish is on the city, to destroy the city, then you're considering the city like an irani dachas. Aye, but in irani dachas, we saw in the Rambam that there's a first stage of hasra. So Ravina says that kind of hasra applies when you're dealing with the yachid. And in this case, Reish Lakish wanted to deal with the yachid and put him into cherem. So Ravina held machrim in osa, meaning the judgment is not on the individual. Cherem is appropriate when you're punishing the individual. And therefore Ravina says, no, machrim in osa, it's got to be on the city itself, not an individual. So this whole pre-stage that Reish Lakish presents, that first we should give it a try and put each individual into cherem one by one, similar to what we did in the Irani Dachas, where we gave our asrah to each individual, that equation is totally inapplicable. It's off base. Why? Because it's not a fault of the individual in the case of Tashbar. It's a negligence of the city as a city, as a communal responsibility.
That doesn't square with the Rambam's language.
Oh, but the Rambam writes
Anshei Ha'ir.
The Rambam writes Anshei Ha'ir. That is a din cherem on Anshei Ha'ir. That means yechidim.
Right.
He doesn't say the city. He says Anshei Ha'ir. So if everything we've said, we've presented is logical, which we have to judge, but if you accept it, then we have to understand how the Rambam could apply some sort of judgment or punishment on the individual members of the city, when clearly the chiv, the obligation of Hoshavas Malamdev Tashbar is on the city itself. So here I think we should try to introduce a different Rambam, and with this we'll finish up. And it's the Rambam in Sanhedrin. The Rambam in Sanhedrin, in Perakof Dalid, says the following, V'chein yesh l'dayon lindos u'lahachrim misha eno ben nidui. You can sometimes use, the Rambam says, the vehicle of cherem and nidui even for someone who wouldn't be chayav nidui. In other words, the Rambam has a whole list of violations. I believe 24, if I remember correctly. But in any event, there's a whole list of criminal acts for which the punishment is cherem. Then the Rambam says there's another concept of cherem. In addition to a punishment for a particular aver as listed, as enumerated, you can use it kidei ligdar peretz. What's ligdar peretz? There's something in the community that's affecting the entire community that's preetzestik. It's like, I don't mean preetzestik in the sense of promiscuity. I mean preetzestik in the sense that it's ripping apart, it's opening, loosening the structure of the community. And it's moral, religious fiber. How do we deal with such a case? Well, we're afraid that this is going wild, it's spreading like wildfire. Who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? You know, they start on with a small level scale, and then tomorrow they didn't expand it, so that's called Ligdar Peretz. Kefisha Shat Tzricho Lekach, and they're going to use Cherem as that vehicle. So, just to summarize, having quoted the Rambam, we see a new Yisod, a new fundamental principle, that Beis Din has the power to use cherem as a vehicle as a punishment, could they lick their parents, even if somebody is not a bar nidud? Why do I mention this Rambam Sanhedrin? I want to come full swing back to our Rambam Hilchos Talmud Torah. The Rambam says, Machrimin es anshei ha'ir. So we ask the question, why are you judging each individual member of the city, putting him, zapping him with a cherem? This is a negligence on a communal level. The answer, I believe, is that we're not using cherem as a punishment. If we were, how can you punish the individual? But rather, we're using cherem, could they lick their parents, as a vehicle to try to achieve a goal and stop the... how do you say it in medical terms? You know, stop the bleeding, right? We want to stop the bleeding over here. What are we going to do? There's a peretz over here. What's the peretz? A city is going ahead without any Torah education, any Torah schools. They didn't hire a malamed. What are we going to do? We're going to impose a cherem on the anshei ha'ir. One by one. And what are we going to try to do? We're going to try to get each anshei ha'ir on board, each individual member of the community, to scare him or shake him up and get him to share the responsibility of guaranteeing that the city fulfill its communal obligation to set up a school system. The Rivash, one of the late Rishonim, early Achronim, he says, in the name of Gaonim, Sha'over al Cherem HaTziburi, if there's a cherem which is imposed by the tzibur, like ours over here, harei u'bichlal oved avodah zara. Wow. This sheds a whole new light. You can have a cherem on an individual level because of his sin, and if he violates that cherem, we'll punish him, but we wouldn't call him an oved avodah zara for that. But there's a power, a special power, in what's called a cherem tzibur. When a tzibur imposes a cherem, meaning there's some need for the entire tzibur to be matil cherem. I don't believe that the Rivash is talking about an avera, and this is the punishment for the avera. I believe that he's looking at cherem from the perspective of the Rambam in Hilchos Sanhedrin, Perek Chav Dalid, as a method, as a means to be go their parents, to get a certain maisa done, to make sure, to guarantee that what has to be done, what has to be implemented, is implemented. In this case, if we apply to our Rambam, we're talking about Hoshavas Malamdim. And what are we going to, in the first round, before we establish some din on the entire city, we're going to go through each individual, and in order to make sure that the city complies with the law of Hoshavas Malamdim, we're going to take each individual and we're going to scare him and threaten him with a cherem. And what kind of a cherem? A cherem tziburi. And we're going to say that if you don't do your share and guarantee that the school system is set up, then you are in violation of a cherem tziburi, which, according to the Rivash, is tantamount to avodah zarah. Therefore, the Rambam says, "Machrimim es anshei ha'ir." Even though the chiyuv to set up the school system is incumbent upon the city as a city, the community as a community, nevertheless, once Beis Din sees that there's a pirtza, a terrible pirtza in a city of Klal Yisrael, that there's no Torah being taught there, and the children are going ignorant, then since the city hasn't fulfilled its obligation, we need a cherem in order to achieve our goal. What the cherem basically does is, it isolates each individual. Don't pass the buck. You know, don't say, wait a minute, what do you want from me? I'm just a Joe. You know, I'm not right. I'm not sitting on the board. You know, I don't represent the city. Go to the big shots. No! We're going to schlep in each yachid and deal with him and judge him on his own. That's the only way we can get this city to wake up and guarantee through this cherem that they'll comply with the law. So we're mechayev basically each one. We take the chovas tzibur and we reduce it to the level of a chovas yachid on each individual. And now each individual is required to set up, do whatever he can, maximize to be Moshe Malamdim. If he doesn't do so, and the city doesn't comply, then basically each individual of the city is in violation, the way the Rivash says, of a cherem tziburi, which is tantamount to avodah zarah. Now we can impose on the city the status of an ira nidachas. The city is guilty now of the crime tantamount to avodah zarah, and therefore machrivim esa'ir. Okay. Thank you.